You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with you under 16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome back to Series 3, Episode 16 of Cawley's Call. Delighted to have you as usual. And we've a special guest in studio today, somebody who I have admired for a long time. He was actually my first League of Ireland idol, would you believe? And I've been looking forward to this for quite some time. So I'm gonna obviously go into great detail about this person's career and all, and we're going to do the usual kind of one-on-one chat, looking back on all his good times and bad times and whatever the case may be. Stewie's not with us, unfortunately. I stood Stewie down because he got so much stick after last week's show, so he got a week's suspension. We'll bring him back next week. But yeah, there was lots of feedback from last week as well, and we are looking into the fan debating that we mentioned, so anyone that wants to be involved in that, just get in touch with us. But without further ado, the man sitting in front of me, and I'm very, very excited with that, I'm very grateful that he's given up of his time, is Mr. Tony Sheridan. Tony, good to see you.
Cheers, Dan. Yeah, good to see you too.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to a little bit of one of the lines I used in that intro. You were my first League of Ireland idol.
That's crazy.
It's not really, and I'll tell you why, because I was Sligo Rovers mad when I was growing up, like most kids, and it was all really kind of, we knew in the town. I lived not far from the showgrounds, and we were football mad, Sligo soccer town, so we used to be in the showgrounds every opportunity we got. But I hit a stage where 12, 13, 14, you kind of have more of an understanding of actually the game and watching players, and it was a time when the club was doing really well. Willie McStay had come over, the manager, obviously, from Celtic. Yeah. And Sligo Rovers were competitive and getting to like semi-finals and finals, and they won the cup in 94. And then you came to town and ruined it all. Probably the best goal I've seen in the showgrounds, but it was that famous lob in, I think it was the semi-final it was at the time.
It would have been the semi-final, yeah. I think we played all our matches away, and then obviously we went down to Sligo. Sligo was always a hard game, just tough. We never went there, and you know, Sligo never made it easy for us. Without scoring that goal, I think it would have been going into probably extra time.
It was very tight. Yeah, the game, it was. Wasn't it?
I don't know if they done replays then. I think they finished them off straight away. So lucky enough, I did score, and you know, for us to get into the final. But you're talking about Sligo, my good mate Jerry Carr.
Yeah,
play with him in Coventry, yeah. So he scored a winner for Sligo.
Yeah,
so there you go. One and Coventry player scored one, and one Coventry player ruined the face.
It's crazy, really. And Jerry was—he's a hero for that. Like I was in Lansdowne Road the day he got the goal, the little flick on and all, and brilliant. And the famous interview—I don't know. I'm delighted. Mm-hmm. He must have said delighted 100 times in interview. But he's a good guy, Jerry. But you mentioned Coventry there, Tony, and as I say, off the back of that goal, of course, I was following your career, and it was the first time that I had, as I said, I had a more of an understanding of the game, and it was the first time I had seen a player like yourself in terms of being that almost like flair player, or one that could create moments of magic. And and it's just, obviously everybody loves those type of players. But when you were growing up as a young lad, it was Lord Celtic, your schoolboy club?
Yeah, Lord was my schoolboy team from four. My two older brothers played, my dad was involved, and obviously my younger sister then came through and played with them as well. So said I started with Lourdes at 4 years of age, and till I was 15 or 16 until I went away to Coventry.
Okay.
Very fond memories of Lourdes.
And was it always it was obviously a natural talent that you had, was that kind of notable from, say, your dad was involved, or coaches could see from a very early age?
Not really. I mean, I had no involvement in football apart from Lourdes Celtic. He never played football. You know, he's a country man. He played Gaelic or played hurling. To be genuine, we don't know where we got it from. I think it's from my two brothers. Watching my two brothers grow up as a kid, because you know they would have been 2 and 4 years older than me. So just watching them, and it just stuck with me. You know, I practiced every day, everywhere I went. Shop, ball. went out training by myself. A lot of people won't believe me, but I did. Okay. So I put an awful lot of work. Played with Lewis, as you said. You know, we weren't a brilliant team, but I just went out and played the best I could.
And I mentioned here, because to me, looking at it and looking at you playing over the years, it comes obviously very, very natural, and you can see that a mile off. But you had to put obviously loads of hours in practice and work in as well.
Yeah, definitely. As I said, my mates would be, you know, out robbing archers. I'd be up in the hill, you know, up in Sundry Park, practicing, running up the hill with the ball, running down the hill with the ball, little things like that. And then obviously we would play five sides against each other, or training in, or, you know, one-on-ones till all hours, you know, 11 o'clock, half 11 at night, you know. And just as I do say to the kids now, you know, if you want to love the ball, that's why you play football, it's to be on the ball, you know. And that's what I loved, I just love being on the ball.
And I suppose you mentioned there, Tony, where you grew up and the area and environment. Do you think obviously that helped you, because you look at kids nowadays, and I'm involved with the young fellas team up in Portmarnock. Now, great setup and all, but it's all very structured, and you look out in the street and you don't see too many out in the street kicking ball the way you were, and the games you mentioned, how treeing in and whatever, whatever was going on, it was constantly games everywhere on the street. I was the same growing up as a kid, there was games everywhere. You don't really see that nowadays.
I don't think you see it, Al, because there's too many distractions, as in PlayStations, Xboxes and things like that, you know. And I think some parents, you know, there is kids that do go out and practice, and then there's kids that think everything's going to come to them. Well, to be honest with you, it's not. You have to work harder to be true with you. Like, you look at the Rovers, you know, I speak to parents that I know, and they're training 3-4 times a week. So, you know, the
with
more
9 to 10 year olds.
Yeah, exactly. The more practice you put in, the better you become. But I just feel that the street footballer is gone.
Yeah,
I personally think the street football. I haven't seen anyone apart from a young lad off Shelbourne. I can't think of his name. He's got a foreign name. Only 17. I watched him a couple of times with the 17s, the under 17s, when Duffer was the manager. And for me, he's the closest we have to being a street footballer. I don't know. I can't think of his name. Hacken or something like that.
No.
Little small, little 17 years of age. He's being selected for the Ireland team. Like, he goes out on the pitch and he wants the ball. The young lad that came on at Rovers last night,
he was very good, wasn't he?
I thought he was very good. Yeah, he wasn't afraid. Yeah. But it looked like, obviously, I only watched a little bit of the game. He only came on with a little bit of the game, so you didn't really get to see. But listening to Royce and yourself, and you know, he has a chance. But you know, it's brilliant to see kids like that. It's just off the cuff.
Yeah, I was doing the game last night, and when he came on, because I had heard a bit about him, and I was at the game in Pat's last week when he came on as sub. But when he came on last night, he was lovely to watch, and as you see, he was fearless. He wanted the ball. He was trying things. It was a brilliant little cameo, and it's nearly sad to hear you say that as well, Tony, because I'd be in agreement with you that the street footballer is gone. That's a sad kind of indictment on football, I think, if that's the case.
It is, because, look, at the end of the day, the way I look at it is, people ask me how I done certain things. It's not natural. It's just, off the cuff. You just do things. You don't know how you done it. You might do it again. But now they're all, for me personally, this is my opinion, I just feel they're all like robots. The kids are told how to play, what way to play, pass the ball here, pass the ball there. It can't, like, even Wessel, you know, like, imagine Wessel playing now. Would he be the player that he was or still is? I don't think so. I really and truly don't think so. Let them go out and play football, let them develop themselves.
I want to get into all that with you, Tony, when kind of as we progress through the chat, because I know you have strong views on that, and the young lads now on coaching and the way it's developed in terms of the League of Ireland. And we discuss this weekly, you know, so it's great to get your views on that, and I will come to it.
Yeah.
Let me take you back to Lourdes, and you mentioned that you weren't a great team, but obviously everybody could know that you were talented. So when did you get the idea that maybe an English club might be calling, or Coventry? Was there a few in the mix, or was it always Coventry?
No, there was I got selected for the under 15s, and you know, you went trials up in Palmerstown, and you had all the lads from the country. I think we had something like 6 or 7 lads from Casement three or four lads from Rivermount, maybe five lads from Rivermount, a couple of lads from Home Farm, yourself from Lourdes, one lad from Sligo. Obviously, Shay Gibbon was in there. Willie Boland, who was with Coventry, Gavin O'Toole. They came in later on because they were a year younger. But just with Lourdes, you know, just wanted, as I said, I just wanted to be the best and go out and try. You know, I would work hard. You know, obviously, I would have worked a lot harder because the team wasn't as good. But the lads were great, you know what I mean? The lads done what they could. But you know, I just wanted to play football.
And was it a case, Tony, you often hear people say, oh, it was always a dream of mine to go here, there and everywhere, or across the water or whatever. Was it just a natural consequence that you were so good that you just ended up going across the water? Like, I suppose the question I'm asking is, when you were a young lad at 12, 13, you weren't sitting there dreaming of going on to play. It was just you were enjoying your football and what was happening, like, you know.
Definitely.
And whatever was to come, comes.
Yeah. Well, like, as I said, you used to go with the Ireland team and you hear what team they're going to. I'm going to Tottenham, I'm going to Man United, Chelsea, I'm going here, I'm going to Liverpool. It didn't really bother me, you know what I mean? I'd be like, in my own head, I'd be like, I wouldn't obviously express it to anyone, but in my own head, I'm like, you know, I'm way better than you. Why am I not going here? Why am I not going? So in the end, I went to Leeds. Should have gone to United. The following day, I went to Leeds for 3 days. I think it was Thursday till Sunday evening. And then I was supposed to fly out Monday morning to United. And I just said to my parents, I'm not going. Went to Coventry.
And why did you not go to United?
I just felt that, you know, you're looking at Leeds, they had so many players there that, you know, would have been such a big club that I didn't have the belief that I would probably make it. Maybe I was wrong, but I just didn't fancy going over, to be true.
So you felt, because of what you'd seen at Leeds, you thought Man United's an even higher step up, that they'd be even better again?
Of course, you know what I mean? They were between them, Liverpool, you know, at the time when I was growing up. So I just decided, no, I didn't want to go, as I said, and I went to Coventry, loved Coventry, went to Brighton, hated Brighton. And in the end, you know, I just said to myself, if I'm going to sign for anyone, and anyone does want to sign me, and if it's Coventry, I'd sign for Coventry. But that was it then.
It's amazing you say that, Tony, because when I remember the day my dad told me I was going away, and like, we're obviously from Sligo, and it was a rare thing if a lad, we never thought, you know, and like that, I was just happy playing my schoolboy football. And the opportunity came to go on trial, and I remember saying, I actually said it to him, I remember to this day, saying, like, why am I going over there? Like, them fellas will be really good, and, you know, I don't know if I'm at that level or whatever. It's mad that Irish people and players, especially one of your talent, that's the perception we almost had, that you nearly look across the water and think, oh, well, they're far better than us.
I never felt you're far better. I just didn't like, you know, I didn't feel like the amount of people that would have been there at Man United. At Leeds, it was probably 15, 20 trialists, you know, like myself, and then probably at Man United, probably it was going to be 50 or 60.
Okay.
Do you know, that was the difference. That's what I felt. So, as well as that, it was more of a homeboy, to be true as well. I only came back from Leeds. I wouldn't have been one of these. Like, there was lads that would be coming back from, you know, to just say Leeds, and then going to United the next day. I wouldn't bother them, where I was kind of, I don't really want to go, you know, the type of way. So
you wanted to be back for a few days at home. A
couple of days at home, you know what I mean? As you said, I just didn't feel that I wanted to go over at that time. And obviously I messed up with United, because I knew that in my own head that if I didn't go on the Monday morning, I would never be asked, which I wasn't.
And were you, as a young lad, a teenager, a quiet lad, kind of confident lad?
No, I would have been quiet. You know, I'm still quiet. Like, a lot of the lads that, you know, I grew up with, you know, I just wanted to play football. Like, I had no interest in that else, to be true, which I never had any interest in, as I said, you know, going off robbing orchards or, you know, robbing shops or whatever, you know. I had no interest. All I wanted to do was play football. Every chance that I got, as I said. Sometimes I used to go off with the lads, and they would tell me to stay down the street just in case.
As watch.
Watch. But no, because I think they kind of knew that, you know, that I had something and didn't want me to get into trouble, so they kind of looked at me. So
brilliant.
That's what I used to do, was be about 500 yards down the road, you know what I mean? And obviously I did, you know, orchards or whatever, you know, I would I wouldn't bother, you know, going in. They would always look after me. So
your mates could even tell at the time. Oh. And would they have been lads, Tony, that might have went down the wrong road then, or but they were always looking out for you kind of thing?
Yeah, well, they would have been lads that went, like, not serious, yeah. But obviously, you know, as they grew older, you know, they got a little bit more cop on, and, you know, none of them have ever been involved in any type of crime or anything like that from, say, 16, 17, obviously.
Just lads.
The girls start coming around, so yeah. That's what they start looking out for instead of going out and robbing arches or robbing shops.
And so when you went to sign with Coventry, was Terry Butcher the manager when you signed?
Terry Butcher would have been the manager, yeah.
And what was he like?
He was all right. Terry was all right. I didn't stay for long. I only stayed for about 4 months, 5 months. I enjoyed the training. I'm just homesick. You know, I got on great with Jez, as we call him, Jez Carr, and Michael Stevens, who was another lad that
How old were you, sorry, Tony? 17?
I would have been 16.
16.
16, just gone 16.
And were they bringing you in with a view to, at that stage, you probably to play under 18 football, was it? Or
no, we were the youths. We were in the youths. There was none of that. Was youths, reserves, and then the first team.
So you made your debut quite quickly then?
Yeah, so that's the way it was. That's the way it used to be over there. And as you said, Jez and Michael Stevens, I said to him on 3 days before Christmas, I won't be back, and I never came back. And then Bobby Gould then rang me the following season, and I didn't know he rang. My mum answered the phone, and he turned around, and phone rang. He told her at a time he was going to ring. I was there, and I was wondering why she was punting around and asked me not to do, give her a hand doing this, do, and then whatever time it was, Bobby Gould got onto the phone, and I actually missed playing football because I wouldn't have been able to play football. I was told, because I signed a 2-year contract or a 3-year contract, so I was registered with Coventry.
And they were going to hold your registration?
And they were going to hold me registration for 3 years. So okay. I wouldn't have been able to play football, and he said to me, come back or I'll come over and drag you back. And I ended up coming back and I loved it.
Okay, brilliant. It's interesting, yeah. Did you have a chat with Terry Butcher when about maybe the homesickness or anything? No,
no, not really. No, you know no. There was nothing wrong with Terry Butcher, as in, you know, obviously the Celtic and Rangers. We used to give a bit of stick before I did come home homesick, give a bit of stick to each other. You know, he used to bet with us about, you know, a packet of sweets or something like that. There was about 8 or 9 Irish lads there. Mm. You know, the lads, Gerald Carr now would class himself as Irish. Mm. Michael Stevens would be the same, so the Irish lads, but Rangers at the time was dominant of Scottish football, so we never won. So I never really spoke to him. Bert, a fella called Bert Edwards, who was the director of football in Coventry, he was more of the go-between. But I just made up my mind, and when I make up my mind, I just stick by it.
And would you have spoken to maybe, you mentioned your mum there, and she was obviously keen for you to be in the house for the phone call, would you have spoken to them about the fact that you were homesickness and wanted to come home?
And he knew I was homesick. Yeah. He knew I was a homeboy, but I never spoke to him. I just kind of went a bit of a rebel, you know, just doing my own thing, didn't care. And then as the weeks and months went by, I couldn't play. So that kind of killed me, you know. My brother did ask me one day to play when I was 16, play with Francis under Pete Mann, just in the friendly game. And I kind of got the buzz back. And as I said, next fall Bobby Gould rang me, and that was it then. He just went, I have to go back. Because I couldn't live without football.
It's a big thing, homesickness, isn't it, Tony? Because, like, I obviously, your experiences of it, but I was away at 16 as well, and the first year was a disaster. The club were giving me 6 flights, and I think I took 13 flights home, because to the point where it came to, I packed the bags one night and said, look, I've had enough of this. But I actually rang my dad and says, look, I'm coming home. And they were great. They said, look, come home, we'll support you. But do me one favour. He said, the club have been so good to you, don't just walk out.
Yeah.
And I did that and went down and just says, look, and the club then says, look, just go home. Take 3 days, 3 weeks, three months, whatever you want. But you need to make a decision. And
well, I wasn't given that opportunity, yeah, to be honest with you. They knew that I was homesick. It was hard. Like, I do say it now, you know, you look at the young kids going away to England now. How could you be homesick? There's flights every single day.
The phones, FaceTime, all this stuff, yeah.
So, you know, at the time when I was playing, I just, as you said, I was a homeboy, so, you know, I kind of wanted, I actually didn't miss my family, and not in a bad way. It was more my mates, and my mother always said, you know, they're acquaintance, they're not mates, they're acquaintance. In time, they will move on, and you will move on. And she was right in the end, but obviously I did go back to Coventry, so I'm delighted that I did.
The mothers are always right, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You'll be close to your mum, Tony, yeah?
Oh, yeah, big time.
I'm the same, yeah. So when you went back then, obviously Bobby Gould was mad to get you back. And were you going back then thinking, obviously you said there, Tony, that you had the buzz back. Were you going back determined then to really kind of do well?
Not really, Hal, to be honest with you. I never for anyone else, you know, the type of way. It wasn't this person that I was going back over. As far as I was concerned, I was going back over to do what I loved, and that was play football. That's the way I looked at it. You know, I missed it. There was no use playing on the streets with the lads that I used to hang around with. You know, it wasn't the same. You wanted that competitive playing against better players, you know, and being tested. And that's the reason why I wanted to go back.
And obviously Bobby Gould must have been a big influence then, was he? Was he good to you?
Well, I don't see... what you know yourself, you don't really... Like, I got on great with Bobby. I would be... obviously on Facebook I would speak to Bobby, you know, and
still to this day.
Still to this day, brilliant. Yeah. And you know, he said to me, or someone said to me, not him, that he seen me at West Brom. And when he came from West Brom to Coventry, he asked where I was, where was the left winger. Because I played left wing. When I went to Coventry first, where was the left winger? And obviously someone said he went home, and that's where he got in contact with me.
Okay, brilliant. And was he the one that gave you the debut then? Was he the manager at the time?
Yeah.
So you made your debut then in the Premier League against Leeds, I think it was it?
Against Leeds, yeah. On Halloween night.
At home or away?
No, away in Elland Road.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hostile?
I never, to be honest with you, Hal, people ask me this all the time. It didn't matter where I played, if it was in Elland Road or up in Sundry Park. I just saw the goals
in the pitch.
That was it. It never bothered me, like in the crowds or anything like that, you know. Just never, I never reacted to it. I just, as I said, it's just the love of football. That's all it was.
So if there was, say a home crowd, for example, and you're receiving the adulation and the praise, would that not turn you on?
Not really, no.
You were just the same?
No, just the same, no. Definitely not. You know, I just wanted to go out and play football, as I said. It's very hard to explain the way I felt, you know what I mean? Obviously, as a kid growing up, it was great that you got parents coming to you and saying, oh, you're brilliant today. But when fans come over and say it to you, it's like you get a little bit nervous because you don't expect things like that, you know what I mean? Players off your team, parents saying it to you, you don't mind that, but other people saying it to you. I don't know, many times fans have come up to me off opposition teams and said it to me, and I'm like, I'm not that fucking good. Sorry for that. I'm not that fucking good. You know what I mean? I'm just a player that goes out and just loves playing football.
But you are that good, or you were that.
Well,
good.
That's the thing. I never.
I know
felt
you're
like
that type.
I never felt like that, and that's probably what the reason why I probably didn't go as far as well. It didn't really affect me that, you know, people say you could have been this, you could have been that, and I say, well, you know, we don't know, you know, so never really kicked into me, you know. I just thought, if we keep playing the way I'm playing, football will look after me, and unfortunately football didn't look after me.
And do you have regrets?
No. Okay. I genuinely do not have any regrets. I did it my way.
Despite that, people like, I listened to an interview, and I'm going to come to it now after we finish the Coventry stuff, but Damian Richardson, who obviously was a big influence on you, and he described you as the three M's: magic, mercurial and moody.
Yeah.
Would he be right?
Moody, he would be right in the three, but I just hate people giving the ball away cheaply, and that drove me up the wall. I know I did. But I make excuses for myself that I could see something that was on, but players passing the ball 10 yards, 15 yards and not reaching it, just annoyed me, you know what I mean? Just really and truly annoyed me. Even when we were playing Owen, I remember Owen Heary playing with Shelbourne and throw in and I'm like, give it to me. No, there's a man behind you. I said, I don't care if there's a man behind you, just give us the ball. And that annoyed me. You know, for me, football is all about trust. You go out and play football with a player, and if you trust, if you're training with him week in, you should know what type of player he is. You should be able to go, I can give him the ball.
Whether there's two men around him.
Or I can't give him the ball. Do you know the type of way?
Yeah.
Like, Wezza would be the one that I would say, you know, give Wezza the ball with five players around him. You know what I mean? Not a bothersome. But that's all. That's what I'm saying. You have to get to understand players. Mm. And I think, you know, that with Owen. Now, I did have a go at Owen. I called him every name of the sun over it. But, like, you just have to trust players. And I think that's what's wrong. I think that's wrong now with football, for me. Personally, especially in the League of Ireland, obviously Rovers, Dundalk are probably different, but the young players, they're afraid to make mistakes, because if they make mistakes, you mightn't see them again.
As you said, it's like the manager, the coach, nearly trying to play the game for them.
Exactly. Does your head in.
So we mentioned Damien there, Tony. Before you came back to Shelbourne, was it 8 games you played with Coventry?
I don't. There's a lot. I think I played 13 altogether. Because coming on as subs and starting, so I don't know, to be honest with you. I never, as you said, everything just went over my head. Like a year ago, one of the lads said to me when I was having a couple of points in my local, do you know you played against Eric Cantona when you played Leeds? I said, I didn't play against Eric Cantona when you played against Leeds. He says, you did. And he googled it. Yeah, obviously Cantona, I came off, and then later on Cantona came on, but I didn't even know Eric Cantona played. That's how much I was oblivious to anything else that was going on around me, you know, sort of way.
So off the back of the debut, and then you go on and play, as you say, 10, 12, 13 matches, whatever, how did you feel things were progressing for you at that stage?
I remember going, we played QPR and Bobby Gould said to me, look, I'm not going to put you in the squad. I'm going to leave you out this week to give you a rest. I'm going to bring in Willie Boland to play instead of you. And I just said, yeah, no problem. Can I play in the U team? Because I was still able to play in the U team. He goes, yeah, you can play in the U team. So that's grand. I went out and played in the U team.
So you were still mad to play a game even with the U team, even though you'd represent, like, you were playing, you were a senior player?
I just wanted to play football, as he said. And next of all, I think it was 6:30, we used to get the pink, you know, a lot of the English clubs in obviously in England, they would have their own paper and have their match report out straight away within an hour of actually the game, and the headlines was Bobby Gould resigns. And from then on, Phil Neal took over and it just went pear-shaped.
Okay, you didn't see eye to eye with him?
No, unfortunately I didn't see eye to eye with Phil Neal. You know, I'm nothing against the man, but I didn't feel that he had a clue, and a lot of the other players didn't feel that he had a clue, and he kept sticking with the same team week in, week out.
So much of it, and I'm glad you brought that up, Tony, because so much of it, especially because parents listen to this about their kids and young fellas and making decisions about going to England, so much of it as well is about luck and him being in the right place at the right time with a manager who might, some manager might want a defensive kind of a player. Another fella sees you as a bit of a maverick or flair player like Bobby, whatever the case may be. And so much depends on your career, your future could be resting in the hands of, because I've had it myself with managers, you know, and kind of one fella likes you and another fella comes in and it can just be a disaster.
Big time. I've always said it, you know, if people ask me a question about English football, it's a rat race. And parents have to understand that, you know, you can go over there and they'll promise everything. They promise your parents this, and this. And then you go over and you're just a number. And you do get a number because the number's on your top. And that's your number. I was number 19 when I first went over. If I had to speak to a parent about going away anywhere, I would tell them to go to the continent, because it's more settled. It's not as busy, as in like England, it's just, as I said, it's a rat race, and players will do players just to get ahead of players. Where in the continent, you actually work on the player, you know, and the development into a better player, and then hopefully then the technique and the desire and the passion comes in when you do that. So that's where I would send me. If my kid was good enough, that's where I would send them.
It's so interesting because the view, their experience I went through feels like exactly what you're saying. You know, it's unbelievable how like for like it is. And I'm sure there's hundreds that have gone through the same, and there'll be another hundreds going through in the future.
Well, I just, as you said, I just feel that, as like you've done it as well, Al. It is a rat race. Like, players will do you and try and do you and train and try and injure you so they can get ahead of you if they're playing in the same position. Obviously, the English lads would be, you know, a little bit OT and try and stitch you up in little things. And parents have to understand that's just the nature of football. And if you,
it's such a cutthroat industry, yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. And if you're not thick-skinned, you're going to struggle.
The experience I have exactly like that, Tony. That they do everything to get you. Now the onus is on you to work, absolutely. But it's like, if you're not doing it, then there's another fella. There's another fella. There's another fella. Mm. It's literally like a conveyor belt.
Of course.
You know, and as use is, whereas other clubs maybe on the continent want to develop a player, they're literally looking at you, and if you're not doing it out the door, there's another fella.
Yeah, exactly. That, like, as you said, I'm not saying the continent is. I think looking in, you look at the technique, you look at the development of players, how calm they are on the ball. I don't think we have that in Ireland. I think what we go off is actually the English base football. We launch it, pressure. You know, you look at the Spanish, the Germans, the Dutch. You know, and that's where I'm getting it from. I don't know what it's like, because I've been to Diamond and Dresden for trials, and it was real relaxed. It was all about your football, and that was the first team. So that's where I'm basing it off, is the first team, and then going from the youth team. Well, I think they look after you, as in it's more technical. Than it would be in England.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I'm sure you can see that in the games. But because I had an experience, Peter Shreves, he was something similar. And I remember going away with the first team, Sheffield Wednesday, bringing me on the first team training on a pre-season tour up to Scotland, and thinking, this is it, now I'm getting a chance and an opportunity, and was buzzing, like, and played in the first friendly, came on a sub, and didn't play in the second one. But I was grand happy with that because I was involved with the first team. And my granny passed away.
Yeah,
and we were in a kind of reception area after the match, and the reserve team manager came in to me at the time, and he says, "Have you rang home yet?" And I says, "No." And he says, "I think you should ring home." So I was thinking straight away, "Shit, what's wrong?" Like, yeah. Rang home, and my dad basically says, "Look, your granny's passed away." But he says, "I rang the club earlier, but I told him not to tell you because I knew the game tonight, and it was a chance for you in case you were involved or whatever." So that was grand. So I was on the bus back down to Sheffield, and I went up to the front of the bus, Peter Shreves, and said, and Gaffer obviously had to call them or whatever, and he says, "I know, son, I already know, you go off and take as long as you want, no panic, and head home, and we'll see you in a couple few days," yeah, or whatever. Yeah. So I says, "Brilliant, fair play, thanks a million." And I think I went home for 4 days for the funeral, and I knew, like, I didn't want to take too long because I was thinking, I'm close, yeah, there's an opportunity for me to get back quickly as you can. And went back, and bang, just turned on me, and to this day I don't know why. And he was stopping training sessions and hammering, and people, yeah, were saying, like, last week he was all over you, and this week he won't even look. And that was the end of it.
But that's what I'm saying. As you said, it's just what they are looking for. Your nanny passed away, and he probably didn't want you to go. But in the end, saying to you, yeah, walk away.
Yeah.
It's like Phil Neal, you know. Phil Neal was the same. Now, I had a Barney with him over. It wasn't a Barney. It was just a bit of stick, and unfortunately, the man couldn't take it. You know, it was about USA 94. Phil Babb was with Coventry at the time, and I said, you know, I sang the song, you know, "The Proclaimers, when you go, will you send back a letter from America saying that you won't be there, Phil Neal?" And he was the assistant manager, and as you said, just from then on,
held it against you.
Yeah, even in training, he used to join to me and everything.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So then when he took over the first team,
Did you know then, Tony?
Yeah, I definitely did. And then obviously Ron Axon came in, and I was playing him week in, week out before he came in, and the squad was listed against Notts Forest, and I went up to these apps and I said, like, I've been playing all the time, why, you can play tonight. And changed it around and brought me on for 15 minutes and took me off, and then I knew straight away that was it.
Brought you on in the match and took
put me on for 15 minutes for the start of the game, and 15 minutes into the game he took me off.
Really? Yeah. And 15 minutes?
Yeah.
And you knew then?
So I knew then, but that's what I'm saying.
Trying to humiliate you.
Yeah, and then we had a, Shells were having a function just around the corner here, just up near Merrion Square. Mm. And he was doing like questions and answers, and he sees me outside, and Ollie Moore calls him, that's Tommy Sheridan, and he turned around and said, yeah, what a player.
He said?
Yeah, and I was confused. So I was like, you fucking got rid of me 5 or 6 years ago. Now you're telling me what a quality player I was? I don't know. That's football.
Yeah, that is football, yeah. So go to happier times, Tony. How did the Shelburne thing come about then? When you knew you were done at Coventry, were you wanting to come home then, or was there options to stay in England?
I went to Bolton for a couple of weeks. I went to Bolton for about 4 or 5 weeks. Nothing happened there. I said I'll come home for the summer. I think that would have been about the March time when Ron Atkinson done that on me. So he said to me, I can't think, the reserve team manager, Roberts, came to me and said to me, Bolton want you to go on trial. So I said, yeah, no problem, I'll go up to Bolton. So I went up to Bolton for a month and nothing happened there. And then I was obviously still in Coventry. So I said, I'm going to go home for the summer. And I got home and my mum said to me, Ray Tracy was on the phone here looking for you, off Shamrock Rovers. So he said, there's his number, give him a call back. So I rang, got his travel agent at the time where he was, obviously he owned it. And he wasn't there. And then the next day, Ollie rang me. And Ollie just saw Michelle one, and that was it. That's all that happened. Ollie just sold Michelle one straight down, met up with him. And that was it then. I was a Shelburne man.
So you could have been a Shamrock Rovers hero, Tony. You had Ray Tracy answer the phone.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
well, that's it. They'll be devastated.
Well, I'm still. That's what I'm saying. I play with the legends, the Rovers legends in games. I'm not a Rovers legends, just to let everyone know. But I play with them. I enjoy it. You know, really, really have a good time up there. And one of my mates then has a recovery room, the Royal Recovery Room, that lets me use it. You know. But that is unbelievable, you know. That if I had that around when I was playing, and probably Al, you were playing, you'd still be playing. Yeah. I love it, you know. Yeah. I love going
it's
up.
So well looked after.
Yeah. Oh, big time, the ice bats and everything. So, but no, that's the only reason why I made the play. Play there the other day. Jesus, now was it more of a charity match, a memorial match? Sorry, one of the lads, Mark Fitzsimons, passed away. And it was like a Shamrock Rovers fans team against the Celtic supporters team. And one of the goalkeeper off Celtic smashed his bleeding arm up.
Did he, yeah? Mm. That's the worst thing about those games.
5 minutes, 10 minutes into the game.
At this stage, yeah. So Ollie sold it to you.
Ollie sold it to me.
And so it wasn't as much, it wasn't Damien Richardson as such. He was the manager, but he wasn't the one doing the kind of swaying.
Well, I went to Damien when I was 14 out to Jingle. On a trial, I stand with Brendan Place. I don't know if you know Brendan. Yeah, Brendan Place. So Damien knew me from then and was chasing me. And I think I'm not 100% sure, but I think if I went to Gillingham, I probably would have been in the first team by the time I was 15.
Okay, he was mad about you.
Yeah, that's being honest with you. And I think I don't know if it was. When he say mad about him, I think it was more to do with he knew how good I was, that if I went to Gillingham by the time I was 15 or 16 he could have probably gotten
made you even better again,
but a big transfer
fee. Okay.
So I think that's probably where he was, the line he was going. He knew he was a good player, so he was thinking to himself, if I can get him over to Gillingham and I'll put him in the first team squad by 15 or 16, he will make.
So despite you feeling that now or knowing that, Tony, and I asked you a few minutes ago, have you any regrets? Do stuff like that kind of, no, you never think of anything.
No, you're
quite happy with.
No, well, look, there's no point in thinking in the past, and I don't have any regrets. Like, you know, little stories you hear, nutsy Pat, obviously Pat Fennin, said it to me that Newcastle put in being in for $150,000, and whoever was in charge of the Shelbourne at the time said nobody wanted $250,000. Do you know? So that's, look, there's no point in crying over spilled milk. Yeah. It's done, it's dusted.
No, I'm with you. You don't look back, you move forward. But it is it's funny when you hear back the stories, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the Shells thing, you talked to it like a duck to water, and did you feel then you were feeling the love, I suppose, that Damien was there playing every week?
In all fairness, Al, I didn't play every week.
Did you not know?
No, I think for the first 6 months, there was a, can't think of his name, Devlocks, an English lad that was there. And he was playing, Damien had me playing right wing, and Devlocks was his second name. He was playing right wing. I think for the first 7 or 8 games, I was like on the bench, and I was like, the fuck is going on here? Why am I on the bench? I'm only gonna come on back from England. I'm fit as a fiddle, and he had me on the bench. And then slowly, I think he was just gradually trying to get me getting used to the league, because at that time, and I won't be afraid to say, the league, some of the older players that were coming near the end were filthy fuckers, to be true with you. I'll never forget it, playing against Rovers, and I think it was my debut for Shelbourne, and the left full. Every time I went up for the ball, he's going up with his elbow and nearly catch me. And I never sussed it. All I could hear from the sideline was, "Catch your fucking elbows up, you tick cunt." Me bleeding brother. Shouting from the other side of the dugout, from where the dugout's the other side of the pitch, telling me to get my elbows up. Because I was so naive going up. Because in England, you didn't really get that.
He was trying to nail you.
Oh, definitely, yeah, definitely. So from then on, he did pull me after the game, and he did say to me, players are going to go out and try and hurt you, so you have to protect yourself. Mm. So in the end, that's what I had to learn to do.
So did it take an adjustment, Tony, getting used to that?
No. Like I said, when you play in the first team, you're playing against, in England, you're playing against players that will be much, much fitter, technically better, and know how to get around the pitch. Where you go to a League of Ireland at the time, you know, the standard was, to be honest with you, the standard was high. But obviously you still had your little hatchet man, as we call them. And unfortunately, the team, we were playing Rovers, and they had a few. Because they were struggling, they were out on their feet, as in regarding nowhere to play. I think they lost Milltown. I think they lost the RDS at the time when I came back. So I think it could have been in Talca Park as, you know, tenants. Mm. So some of them had a point to prove that this is air ground. We're playing on your ground, but this is air ground. I just go out and play football. Even the kids, I go out sometimes and train with lures on the tour dance, and I still think I'm playing again. Like, I get my arm out and I'm holding them up and I'm pushing them on the ground.
If they give the ball away, you give it out to them?
No. Unfortunately, I don't give out them. I've learnt. I done me kickstart one and kickstart two, so that kind of learned me not to. Okay. Some players, especially younger kids, wouldn't be able to play, don't have the ability that you have. So you just have to try and nurture them into having that ability.
So, as I said, the whole cup thing, we touched on at the start of the chat, Tony. That was my first time that I really came across you, that run. And then you go on to the final and the famous goal when you were one down, and the volley. You mentioned instinct and off-the-cuff stuff. Yeah. That just drops you and you hit it, I presume.
Yeah, I can't elaborate on it because it's just one of them things that just comes to you,
Is that your best goal?
No.
Okay.
No. Best goal was up a part of down. We were playing Nori, and they used to keep me up all the time. And I said to the keeper, Mickey Keenahan, I said to him, I said, if you get the ball, play it first time. Because Goffey used to do it all the time, Alan Goff, when he was playing with Shells. And I would always stay up. And I went forward to get the ball, but he kicked it. And as he kicked it, it was I turned. And I was just inside my own half. And I took the ball with my right foot. And just as it hit the ground, my left foot, I just smacked it from just inside my own half. And the ball from went straight into the top corner. So that would have been the best goal. Your man Mickey, Jimmy Fullerton, you know, the old... I've asked
Jackie
people,
Fullerton.
Jackie Fullerton. I've asked people to...
No footage of it anyway.
No footage of it, but he was there and he said it's the best goal he's ever seen in his lifetime.
And he's seen lots of goals.
Well, so that would have been my best...
Ported down.
Ported down, yeah, against no.
I had a little stint to Port. There's a lot of similarities here, Tony. Yeah. Now, I'm not as good.
No,
but they looked after us great.
Port
down was great. Now, I only had a short stint up there, but I have to say, Ronnie McFall was in charge at the time.
Yeah, he was the same as well. I didn't like the standard of football. You know, like League of Ireland was, like, for me, was miles ahead of, definitely miles ahead of it. You know, we had to, I'm talking about Hatcher, man. Jesus Christ, players just went out to try and break you up.
Yeah, terrible. Yeah,
You know, and I done a year myself up there, and they came down to sign me on a 2-year contract and met me in the Skylon and offered me this, and I just said no. I just couldn't do play football up there. I didn't enjoy it. Mm. Like, you know, it was terrible. It wasn't about the fans or the place or anything. It's just the football.
Yeah.
Football was shocking.
So the sense I'm getting throughout all this chat, all you want, it's just football. It all boils down to football.
Yeah,
no matter what the noise is outside, or you contracts or money or anything, it's just you just wanted to be happy playing your football.
That's what I'm saying. That's all it was. That's all I wanted to do as a kid when I got to about 3 or 4, just play football.
So if I could ask you then, Tony, like we mentioned there about managers who might like you, might not like you, opinions, all that kind of stuff, who would have probably had the biggest influence as a manager? Who did you love playing under?
The biggest influence as a manager would have been, to be honest with you, would have been Bobby Gould, first and foremost. Definitely Bobby. You know,
and when he resigned, and he ever look to try and get you? Yeah, did he get you back places? And
no, he quit completely. And then about 7 or 8 years, maybe 10 years. He went, I would have been about 28, 29, and he went to Cardiff. And I actually rang him and asked him, could I come over on trials? And he said, yeah. And I went over, done what I had to do, signed, and trained every day like a lunatic. And I came home one time, and I think I put on a half a pound. Do you weigh it before you went home? I put on a half a pound. And Alan Cork, who played with Wimbledon with him, he was the manager then. Bobby went up to as a football director or something like that, and Alan Cork came in and took over. And the Monday I came back, and he says to me, you're half a pound overweight, you're going to start tomorrow against Rochdale or someone up there up in the tour division at the time, or second division. And I just, a week later, I just went into Bobby and said, look, I was earning more money back in Ireland. I said, I'm not earning that here. I said, I just want to go. Can you terminate my contract? And we agreed. But it wasn't to do with money. It was just, I didn't like that attitude. Half a bleeding pound. What's a half a pound? Do you know what I mean? Half a pound doesn't stop you from playing football.
Yeah.
So that kind of annoyed me. And all the hard work that I did put in, like, you know, when lads were out, off on a day off doing their golf, or I was always asked to come in. If it wasn't in the training ground, there'd be a park across the road from where Ninian Park was, and I would bust a gun. And then for him to turn around and say, half a pound, nah, not for me.
You weren't having that. Do you mind me asking as well, Tony, because lots of people obviously speak about your talents, but you mentioned here the league at the time, and I love the league. Going back since I was a kid, obviously, and all through the years, so even the older players, and as I was growing up, the fellas I used to love watching, or then when I was lucky enough to play in against fellas, and the likes of Stephen Gagan would have been always one of my favourites, and loved him and Liam Coyle and these brilliant players. But who would be a player that you would kind of look at over the years in the league that would stand out for you, or even in England, the type of fellas that you would have liked watching?
Well, I used to, I didn't support any team in the League of Ireland, to be honest with you, when I was growing up. But my dad used to bring us over to Dalymount to watch Bowes and Jackie Jameson. You know, just the way he played football. You know, he had a bit of guile about him, and he could score goals. Then, as I grew older, I used to go down to Harold's Cross, because I wouldn't be far from Harold's Cross. And I used to watch, obviously, I didn't go a lot because he used to try and charge me, and that's why I don't like Pats. So I used to, I, and that's the truth. Because,
really?
Yeah, he used to try and, because I looked a lot older when I was a young lad. So I looked, when I was 13, I looked about 15 or 16. So I used to go down, sorry, £10, don't think so, mate, walk around the back, the Lancer Lanes, because I knew, used to know where I was going and jump in. But I went in and watched Derry, and the Derry team would have been, you know, Jonathan Speak would have been playing at the time. And, you know, years later, I play against Jonathan Speak for Finn Harps. What's his name? Felix Healy. Mm. I think the likes of Mick and
Dulo would have been.
Dulo all went up at that time. That would have been about 89 now. I might be wrong about the time. It would have been, because, yeah, it went to Coventry when I was 16. So about 88, 89. I think the only Derry only came back into the league. Mm. And there was about, Jesus, there must have been about 10,000 people at the game. Mm.
So Jim McLaughlin, I think, would he have been?
He would have been the manager, yeah. So that's they were the game. Now, I went to Bowes a couple of times. No, I don't support Bowes or anything like that, but it's just where we were. My dad used to come back. He lived in Cavan, so we used to come back from Cavan and get the bus early, and Bowes would play at 3 o'clock. So on the way home, he would always bring us in to watch Bowes playing against whoever you were playing. So I remember Jackie Jameson.
Okay, he's the one that sticks out.
And also a Lourdes man.
Okay, was he? Yeah,
Jackie was.
I never saw Jackie Jameson playing, but everyone speaks about how good he was. Yeah. So are you involved now, Tony? Bits and bobs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm doing a little bit with Lourdes under the under 14s this year. Obviously, still playing football with Rovers, as you said. Like, I just love playing football. Though, you know, even get involved in the training. I shouldn't, because my cartilage is playing up, and I think it's going to go one of the days, and I'm probably going to regret it, because ourselves keep saying it. But okay, when you, like, again there on Saturday playing that Rovers like game against Celtic, you know, I just can't stop.
Yeah,
like just can't. Well, that's what I'm saying. As I said, one of my mates owns that recovery room, and I'll tell you what, if I didn't have that, I wouldn't have been, I'd be sore.
Do you think the type of player that you were, and you spoke about like how tough it was back then and fellas trying to nail you, the game's changed a lot, like you see now it's nearly become a non-contact, yeah. But for the likes of the player you were, maybe it might have been a good thing. Where do you think, Tony, from, because I know you go down to Shells and obviously you watch the games and you were watching the Rovers match last night, where do you think the league is at right now, or do you think it's progressing, do you think the standard is good?
Personally, I think not towards when I play. Like, people ask me, and I'm not putting the league down or anything like that, but like,
for being
me,
honest.
The league, well, I am being honest. Like, at the end of the day, imagine Derry, Shells, Pats, Sligo, Galway, even Galway, Cork, all these teams being full time. I know not all the teams are full time in the league, but Rovers are. Jesus Christ, the players, and as you said, street footballers, you know, they had a bit of guile about them. You know, I still think, like, people talk about, you know, the Shells team, which was brilliant, that went to beating Deportivo. Like, but I still think the Shells team that I played under, if we were full time, it would have been some hell of a game. You know what I mean? We weren't full time, you know, so imagine if we were full time. So I think the league, for me, you know, it's not the quality of players are not there. Like, you see the young lad coming on last night, and Oidemo.
Yeah.
You know, that's brilliant that Rovers are doing that. But, you know, you need to let them just express themselves. And I'm sure, like, I speak to Bradzer when we're playing the matches for Rovers. I wouldn't tell him how to manage his team, which I don't think he would, you know. I think you tell me to, yeah, good luck, whatever. What are you doing? You're down with Lewis, you're managing Rovers. But I just think players need to be off the cuff. Like that lad last night, as I said, brilliant to see. Comes on, first touch, puts it through your man's leg and plays it through. You know what I mean?
And he's a lovely player, yeah.
And he wasn't afraid. And I don't know if the coaches, the management up there in Rovers are saying that, but you look at all the other teams, not Rovers, I'm talking about in general, the kids are like robots. Mm. Like if I had a young kid that had all the talent in the world, I wouldn't be trying to tell him to, here, you should have done that. You know, I'd give him the option and say to him, maybe if you went there, you could have gone there for a 1-2 or whatever. But if he wants to do it and he can do it, leave him to him. Mm. Let him learn.
And in terms of the structures around that, obviously the league is looking to progress, the national underage leagues, but
I don't want to talk about the national league underage. I think it's a joke.
You're not a fan of that at all?
I absolutely hate it. I think whoever thought of that idea is an absolute down.
Because you would have come through the schoolboy, the old school route, as so many did.
Yeah.
And you think that still should be, or they're something killing, along the lines
of it. They're killing football. They're killing schoolboy football. It's plain and simple. And the reason why they're killing schoolboy football is because all these kids are 12, 13 years of age. They're going into these National League teams and they're playing a year in National League and then having to go and play DDSL under 14s, back into National League under 15s, back into schoolboy football under 16s. Pointless, absolutely pointless. And then also they're killing other kids' ambitions. As I do say to people, you know, there could be a kid that just needs that, just that little bit more effort. And he goes to a League of Ireland team and he's told he's not good enough and he just gives up playing football. So, as I said, whoever came up with this concept of underage National League is an absolute downer.
And in terms of the, I suppose, you look at it at the moment, Tony, with the schoolboys, you would have always been of the view that that was the route that they've come through. And I think the way it was implemented obviously annoyed a lot of people as well.
Yeah, well, look, as I said, I could talk all day all about this because it's something that does my head in, you know. The National League, okay, most of the players, we all know this, people have to realise, most of the players, by the time they hit, I know it might change now with this Brexit and they're talking that players can't go away to England until they're 18, but if they could, most of the good players will be gone by the time they're 16. So what is the point in doing it? You know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense.
And the parents have a lot to answer for as well.
Well, some parents are living their dreams through their kids, unfortunately, and don't see the bigger picture. And, you know, as I said, at the moment, you know, you probably go up to Rovers, probably go up to Shells, Bowes, whatever team, and you got trialists, 50, 60 people going up in trials, and, you know, just let them play football. Simple as.
Well,
their
local club on the
doorstep.
Their
local club, yeah. Why would you want to be running around? And as I said, it's great signing up for Shamrock Rovers or signing up for Shells or Bowes or anything like that. But are you guaranteed your place? What are you going to do? You squad of 18? I think they have a squad of 18. You can only pick 6 players as subs, I think. So you have 2 lads, or one lad missing out. So you're sitting on the bench or you're sitting in the stand. Come on, you know, cop on. Just let them play schoolboy football where, you know, where it all begins.
Would you like to be playing now? In this league? If you got the chance all over again, do you think you'd prefer it in the league now than maybe than when you were playing?
I would prefer it now. The reason why I prefer it now is because it would be full time. But not the standards.
Okay.
Would be, I think the standard when we were playing was completely different than the standards.
I'm at games every week and I said the league is at very average to me right now.
I think it is. I've said this for years.
Yeah.
I just think the emphasis, like, you look at it, Dundalk blew the league away for 3 or 4 years when Stephen Kenny was in charge. Now Rovers are blowing the league away. This will be their third consecutive league title in a row. Before that it was Rovers again. Before that I think it was Shelts, wasn't it?
But that's what I'm saying.
Mostly when you get any domination, normally it stays for 5 or 6 years. Like Rovers, in all fairness, Derry, hopefully now I've seen him, as I said, I watched
Derry. He's not being tested.
No. Well, I watched Derry. Derry are a young side, and I think, you know, if the lads get up, get it right up there, there could be a team that could be challenging for titles, in, but not for the next 2 years, I don't think so.
Tony, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I appreciate your time. As I say, I loved watching you. Many other people did. Maybe you should acknowledge the fans and think, yeah, fair enough, I accept it now. You may not have accepted it years ago, but
people, I'll never accept it.
People did think you were good. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
No problem, man.
That was episode 16. Hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did. Stewie will be back from suspension next week. A big thank you to Vinny as well, Benetti Menswear. It was his birthday over the weekend, so we have to give the sponsor a good shout out. And Paul Morris as well, who looks after things in the control room. So that was episode 16. We'll be back next week. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.